The Hurling Pod on Off the Ball.
No particular order. Happy enough?
Just top five.
Yeah. So we'll go Keane Lynch, TJ Reid, Dermot Burns, Barry Nash, Tony Kelly.
Free wherever you get your podcast.
Off the Ball Daily.
We're very welcome along to Off the Ball Sunday here on Newstalk. Shane Hannan with you through for the next 6 hours until 7pm. Loads to come between now and then. We're going to have all of the reaction to the Munster Senior Hurling Final yesterday evening at the TUS Gaelicgrounds in Limerick. What a match. And of course, Cork progressing and winning that one 3-2 on penalties. Just an absolutely instant classic game, to be fair. And Pat Ryan and all of the Cork players delighted. The scenes on the pitch at the end were incredible. We'll have a reaction, of course, later in the show from Tommy Welch, who was at that match with Tommy Rooney. And Tommy's going to be with us to build up, of course, to the Leinster Hurling Final today as well, which is a 4 o'clock start between Kilkenny and Galway. We will have some football chat later on in the show as well, around 4 o'clock. David Snaid, football journalist, and Tim Clancy, the former Pats and Drogheda United and Cork City boss, is going to join me in studio to talk, well, the Republic of Ireland, Ange Postecoglou's sacking, plenty of other bits and bobs happening in the world of football as well. We'll have the Sunday paper review, as we always do on a Sunday, at 2 o'clock. That is going to be live on the air. Lisa Fallon, who has, for the last 4 years, been working with FIFA in their Global Football Development Division as the technical content lead for all FIFA World Cup tournaments. She's a former League of Ireland coach and a coach with various other high-level teams across an array of sports. And Paddy Christie, the former Dublin footballer and former Longford senior football boss as well, will also be in studio for that Sunday paper review from 2 o'clock. Around 5 o'clock as well, I'm going to play out the Barry McGuigan interview from a few weeks ago. We aired it on the show on Off the Ball Saturday, but today, June 8th, is the 40th anniversary exactly since Barry McGuigan's world title fight against Eusebio Pedrosa at Loftus Road in London, June 8th, 1985. So we'll play that chat back for you at around 5 o'clock or so this evening. We'll keep you up to speed in all of the live sport as well happening, and we'll have all of the GAA reaction from today's games, from yesterday's games. We have reporters at different matches. Jonathan Higgins is at the Joe McDonagh Cup final at Croke Park between Kildare and Laois. That gets underway at 1:45. Of course, as I said, Tommy Welch and Tommy Rooney at the big one, Kilkenny versus Galway for us. Rachel Sheehan is at Waterford versus Dublin as well in the All-Ireland Ladies Senior Football Championship in Dungarvan from 1:30. Delighted to have Alana Canaan and Anne-Marie Donlan in studio. Good afternoon.
Hi, Shane.
Hi, Shane.
Only one place to start. Penalties. Penalties, yes or no in hurling?
Well, I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, I think
Tough way to lose. Great way to win.
I think it was crazy. Especially if you're neutral watching, it was fantastic entertainment. But I imagine if you're from one of the two counties, it was hide behind the couch stuff.
Yeah. Torture. Because like, my only experience as a fan was the... You'd have experienced it as well as
Galway
a fan.
Galway Armagh.
I was there that day in Monaghan against Armagh in the quarterfinal the following year. And I don't know about you, but watching your county in a penalty shootout, in a knockout game. I know yesterday wasn't a knockout game, but look, it's still silverware on the line. It's torture.
Yeah, it was difficult that day. Although Galway's penalties were a lot better than Armagh's that day. Yeah, in fairness. So I can imagine, though, for Armagh, all those times, it was very difficult to watch. Yeah, it is tough that a Munster final as well be decided in a slightly cruel fashion. But look, it had to finish. Someone had to win. And the condensed season means that it is this way. But oh, come on, like, I don't think anyone bar Limerick is complaining. You can't have any complaints for Cork. Like, they were absolutely brilliant. To come out and do that just 3 weeks after the humiliation, that was just fantastic. From the minute the ball was thrown in as well, the turnovers, the desire in them, the sense of, you know, direction, it was all absolutely brilliant. I'd only love to hear what Pat Ryan had said to them over the last 3 weeks and what was being said at training, because they were like dogs. It was absolutely brilliant and a joy to watch. Yeah, I didn't want it to finish. And after a Munster Hurling Championship that by its own standards this year hasn't been great, and there's, I found it funny over the last few weeks, the hurling crowd slightly aggrieved with the attention that football is getting with the new rules. And last night was a real get back in your box there now. Yeah. They put on a show for the ages. It was absolutely excellent. And Saturday night, I love Saturday night games.
I thought it was great.
Agreed.
Yeah, people giving out about the move away from tradition. I'm all for the Saturday night. And the players get to go out last night. They get to recover today and go back to work on Monday. I'm all here for Saturdays.
Yeah, it just had a mad feel about it. From, like, I'm trying to remember some of the moments early in the game, and it's all kind of, it all melts away because it's so long, and it's 90 minutes of hurling, obviously, and the extra time, and John Kiely wasn't too happy, I don't think, with the 3 minutes of added time at the end of.
There was that kind of moment as well, obviously, in the first half. This is always the conversation around hurling. Like, obviously, if you went to the particulars of the rules, and then there's sort of a letting it go kind of mantra. And obviously, during the first half, I think that was really well done. And then you could see it in the start of the second half. There was just a, this is going to boil over.
Yeah, the ref kind of felt he had to take control of the game.
I thought Thomas Walsh did very well.
Oh, I thought he had a good game, but I think he really did feel, particularly with the row at halftime, that he had to kind of get a sense of taking over the game in those early minutes of the second half. You know, he kind of laid down his position as boss.
Absolutely, because there was fouls in the first half that maybe you could have argued could have been yellow cards, and then all of a sudden there was just a pull of a jersey and that was a yellow card.
Consistency wasn't quite there, but it was really, he let it flow. It was a brilliant game to watch. There were
fair play to him as well. Yeah. You know, it didn't end in a nice fashion.
He gets the
for
cramp.
Him. Yeah,
because I noticed him on camera at the just before extra time started, and he was. I saw him on the TV camera limping a little bit, and I was thinking he actually doesn't look great.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, it's the first time he obviously opened his legs and started running a bit. And you forget that the referees do.
They cover a distance
mileage
of about 10 kilometers, and frantic as well. And they don't get to go over and have the water breaks, and they don't get to kind of relax a few minutes when the ball is up the other end of the field. So fair play to him. It wasn't a nice way for it to end for him.
No.
And he was obviously gutted as well. You could see in his face, you know, I hope he does get another big game now, kind of further into the summer.
Yeah, it was quite incredible. The Cork subs were brilliant as well.
Oh, like Kingston and Lahan.
Lahan was class.
Yeah.
It was like one of those days, like I even forget the Aaron Gillan free. Wasn't at the end of normal time?
Yeah.
The Aaron Gillan free, he standing over it and has to win it. And you're thinking, like, that's probably a 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10 for Gillan, someone of his quality. It was still a really tough free under the circumstances, but for someone of his calibre, I was thinking this is going over. There's
the bottle that they all showed kind of in those big moments was amazing. Declan Hannan as well, to come on and make that impact that he made. I know his penalty didn't go well for him, but I thought his impact when he came on there in extra time, you know, it was a real big moment, a big leader coming on.
This thing, I was listening to Tommy Welch talking to Tommy Reid. I'll pick this up with Tommy later on, but you know, saying that it's a lottery. I don't buy this idea that penalties is a lottery. Like,
no, either do I.
You can prepare for it. You can execute it well. You can train for it. Study it.
There is that thing though, to a degree, and obviously we were talking about it before we came on air, but in hurling, to save a penalty is like a phenomenal feat. Just like, given the speed. And obviously the object that you're trying to hit is so tiny.
Yeah.
So in comparison to other sports, there is that more degree of difficulty in terms of the goalkeeping perhaps. Mm. But I take your point. Like, you are expected to train them and be able to execute them when the time comes as well.
Yeah, and I think Pat Ryan had said that after the match, that those players are always practicing penalties, you know, at the end of training or whatever it might be. They're always...
Henry Shefflin's point as well was interesting on comment or in punditry, when he said that he'd have the fresher guys take the penalty because the power is there in the legs. And who took the first Cork penalty?
Oh, I can find out for you here.
His run up to, or, you know, he just didn't look convincing.
Yeah, the back leg just wasn't quite there.
And then he had the cramp afterwards, completely proving Henry's point. Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, the penalties were, because even Dara Fitzgibbon 65 to level it. And
yeah,
bring
I think
it
was Fitzgibbon then. Yeah.
Was it Fitzgibbon? Yeah. It was incredible.
And but after 90 minutes of, you know, your head like would be all over the place, you know, after 90 minutes of that frantic, like end to end chaos, and then to try and compose yourself to go up and to take a penalty with a Munster final on the line. And fair play to the two keepers as well. And I was so happy that each keeper saved one because, you know, neither of the keepers, like, the loss can be put down to either of them. Do you know what I mean? So I was delighted there.
At least three Limerick players missed. You know, there's not one fall guy.
No,
you know, taking all the pressure.
Yeah, it's horrible when a penalty shootout clearly falls on one guy.
Yeah, it's 5-4 and one guy misses or one player misses. Because even the halftime scenes, two teams walking off and you're seeing both sets of management going over the referee.
It
was class.
Yeah.
All the backroom staff getting involved, a bit of pushing and shoving.
This is it though. You just know this week it's going to be dominated by, there was definitely scope to have a replay next Sunday, whichever it was going to be. Now obviously that would mean a lesser time to prepare for the loser in terms of the quarter final, but,
and also player welfare. Like the whole argument that people are saying, oh, these players play far too much, you know, that between club and county and all the rest, and to throw another.
Yeah.
So replay could go 90 minutes as well. You know, you could have extra time in a replay.
Yeah.
There's just nothing.
Easily, yeah. There's nothing between those two teams when they're both at it.
So yeah.
You could easily have a replay go to extra time and then to penalties.
Yeah,
it's like, what
true.
Was all this for?
Yeah.
You know?
Because people are shouting from the rafters about, you know, oh, there shouldn't be penalties in hurling. This is not the way. And particularly in hurling, I think people don't like it being, you know, because in football, I guess we're used to penalty shootouts in some ways. Carol Kane had a good point on Twitter last night. After the match, he said, bingo card for the national media for the next few days. Cruel to lose a final on penalties. Referee cramping shouldn't happen. No time to enjoy it. Condensed season. Put the All-Ireland finals back a month with no actual counter-argument put forward. I think that's the point. Everyone is shouting and giving out about things, but rarely with an actual ban.
Yeah, and then that's it. If you ask any of the players, they all favour the split season. And I suppose the split season then leads to the sort of condensed calendar. Mm. So they go hand in hand that way.
We're starting the news round with that match last night. Some reaction, Anne-Marie?
Yeah, Cork manager Pat Ryan says it's huge for them to be crowned Munster hurling champions. As we were saying, they held on to win 3-2 on penalties against Limerick last night. So they got their hands on the Micmacky Cup for the first time in 7 years. It had finished level after extra time at the TUS Gaelic Grounds. Cork 130, Limerick 227. Limerick, who were bidding, of course, for a seventh successive provincial title, had hammered the league champions by 16 points in the round robin. That was just 3 weeks ago. But with yesterday's win, Cork now advanced straight through to the All-Ireland semi-finals. And here is their manager, Pat Ryan, at the Gaelic Grounds, where there's a bit of noise in the background. That is the celebrations going on.
We were just focused on coming up here and really going to battle with Limerick and represent the jersey and represent our people the last day. The people are spending good money to come up here, and we didn't give them any value for money the last day. I think both teams gave fierce value for money to both their supporters today and to everyone. So we won by penalties against a brilliant Limerick team. Do you know what I mean? This is just the start. This is just one thing. That we move on to the All-Ireland Series semi-finals, and you know, look, we know we're a really good team, but you saw what we were like when we were not at it 3 weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago. So there's odd play for.
So Limerick now have to do it the long way round.
Mm.
Last night, could we just poke? Did they not in 2018?
Well, they finished third in Munster that year, so they played. It was a slightly different.
Okay,
it was the extra game as well, but yeah, they haven't come in as Munster runners up essentially.
Last night could be poking the bear though in terms of Limerick, because Limerick weren't as good last night as they were 3 weeks ago.
And they still didn't lose last night.
No, yeah.
You know, they drew the game.
And 3 weeks ago felt like a bit of a statement performance, like, because there was so much talk about Cork and the build up to that game after they had won the league and they became a lot of people's All-Ireland favourites. There was a sense in that game, Limerick kind of coming out saying, no, we're the team to beat, and could they do that again now? When they get up to Croke Park, we presume they probably will get through to the semi-final.
Yeah.
So we could have a trilogy, Cork and Limerick again. It'd be brilliant.
It's all about that reaction as well. Like, people were talking about how will Cork react off the back of the 16-point defeat, but like, Limerick will tap into this now and it'll be bubbling away there. And
I mean, would you prefer, like, you know, if Limerick, say, were to play Cork later in the championship in a semi-final and did beat them, or a final, did beat them, you'd be thinking, well, You'd prefer to win that game than win the Munster final, ultimately.
This is it. So, and it is the whole thing. We'll see you later in the summer.
Exactly. Could be poking the bear. And John Kelly afterwards, like, he was talking about the fact that they could have won the game in extra time. I think they had 14 chances, scoring chances, as he put it, to Cork's 8. So they'll feel a little bit aggrieved that they didn't maybe push it over the line. And because I even felt at halftime of normal time, 4-point lead, 114 to 110 for Cork wasn't enough, because everyone was talking about the wind there and that it was maybe a 7 or 8 point wind more than a 4 point wind. So I felt like Limerick were going to push on in the second half, but it just didn't happen. And fair dues to Cork, they did the job and it was excellent. More hurling this afternoon, Anne-Marie, thankfully.
Yeah, Kilkenny will look to win a sixth straight Leinster Championship later on. They face Galway at Croke Park from 4 o'clock. Micheál Donoghue's side are looking to lift the Bob O'Keefe Cup for the first time since 2018. Darragh Fahy is suspended for Galway, so Aina Murphy is set to keep goal for them, with Kevin Cooney preferred to Anthony Burns in their attack. Kilkenny then remain without injured star forward Owen Cody. Adrian Mullen returns to the 11 shirt after being deployed at centre half back in their last game against Wexford. So that's at 4 o'clock, and before that it's the Joe McDonagh Cup final. That is Laois and Kildare from a quarter to two.
For us, there's more GAA today, Anne-Marie.
Yeah, some other bits and pieces going on. Two Tailteann Cup preliminary quarterfinals this afternoon. Wexford and Antrim meet at Chadwick's Wexford Park. That's at 1:30. And then at 2:00, it's Sligo against Carlow in Tubbercurry. Westmeath and Offaly booked their places in the last 8 yesterday. The final spot then in the All-Ireland Minor Football semi-finals will be decided later on. Leinster champions Offaly take on Mayo. That's at Dr. Hyde Park from 3 o'clock. Carla Rowe and Sinead Goldrick meanwhile return to the Dublin team for their trip to Waterford in the TG Cahir All-Ireland Ladies Senior Football Championship. Throw-in is at 1:30. That's at Dungarvan. And there's tennis as well. This afternoon's French Open final will be the first men's Grand Slam decider to be contested by two players who were born this century. So a real sense of the new era here. Carlos Alcaraz defends his crown at Roland Garros. The world number one, Jannik Sinner, is his opponent. That's at 2 o'clock. The duo have won the last 5 slams between them. Meanwhile, Coco Gauff admits she had doubts ahead of winning the French Open women's title yesterday. The 21-year-old American came from a set down to beat world number one Aryna Sabalenka in the final at Roland Garros. And that marked her second major victory after previously winning the 2023 US Open. She was asked after the match what it was like winning as an American in Paris.
You know, obviously there's a lot going on in our country right now with things like everything. Yeah, I'm sure you guys know. But just to be able to be a representation of that, and a representation of, I guess, people that look like me in America who maybe don't feel as supported during this time period. And so just being that reflection of hope and light for those people. And I remember, you know, after the election, everything, it was a kind of felt down period a little bit and things like that. And my mom told me, like, during Riyadh, just try to win the tournament just to give something for people to smile for. And so that's what I was thinking about today when holding that, and then seeing the flags in the crowd means a lot. And, you know, some people may feel some type of way about being patriotic and things like that, but I'm definitely patriotic. I'm proud to be American, and I'm proud to represent, you know, the Americans that look like me and people who kind of support the things that I support.
Yeah, an incredible achievement by Coco Gauff. Brilliant performance, having gone a set down, as Anne-Marie said, in that French Open singles final yesterday. Really looking forward to the men's.
She's so well spoken.
She is, isn't she?
21-year-old. Did you see any of the press conference?
Oh, sorry, the match itself. Yeah. I was watching some of the match itself.
Aryna Sabalenka is a terrible loser. I know a lot of sports people, good winners, bad losers, but wow, she was not very classy in her press conference.
What was she saying
afterwards? Well, she said openly Swiatek would have beaten Coco Gauff. And they put it to Gauff afterwards. And for a 21-year-old, she's so well-spoken and she was so classy in her response. She just said that she disagreed with that and that she felt it was an unfair thing to say. But yeah, Sabalenka, when Gauff as well, the trophy presentation was made, the first thing she did was commiserate Aryna Sabalenka, and she kind of stood there with like a very sour face. You know, it was very disingenuous, her clapping as well from Sabalenka. Yeah, she really did not cover herself well.
I thought even during the game, watching the body language of the two players yesterday afternoon, that Sabalenka, you know, if she missed a point at different times, she went from having an advantage back to deuce, and she would spend, and it was on her serve, and she'd spend ages shaking her head before taking the serve. It was almost like a performative shaking of the head, making sure Gauff saw her.
Theatric.
Yeah, it was very, very bizarre. And obviously she won that set and then ultimately loses, but it's a strange one.
She solely blamed the conditions as well, but both players were playing in the same conditions,
Yeah.
You know. I just thought she came across really badly in her press conference, and the comparison was stark between the two of them. I know obviously one's won and one's lost, But just the way Goff carries herself is much more impressive, yeah, in my opinion.
Strange. Just want to mention about the camogie. Will O'Callaghan brought this to our attention last night as well. He mentioned there's a discussion on how the inter-county game is in a bit of trouble in camogie as well. 58 and 40 point beatings at senior level in camogie yesterday. Cork handed out hammerings before their break week as well, and how the top four or five teams seem miles ahead. A 50 point drubbing in the Premier Junior as well, and all teams from that group qualify for the knockouts because there are so few counties fielding this year. Just to bring you some of the scorelines from yesterday, this was in the Premier Junior that Will spoke about. Armagh, 7 goals and 37 points, Louth no score.
Oh.
Which I've never seen that.
Yeah.
And then you had in the senior, two of the games particularly in the senior, in Group 1, Wexford 7 points, Tipperary 7 goals and 18 points. And they had in Group 2, Waterford 5 goals and 30 points, Derry 2 points. So like that's, obviously there were tighter games. Kenny beat Dublin by 5 and Clare and Limerick drew. So they're still really good games, but there seems to be a bit of a gap.
It's interesting that you mentioned there, like those teams aren't part of the traditional big three or four, yeah, within camogie. So that's kind of another point that there are these kind of other forces emerging. But yeah, you don't like to see big scorelines like that, surely.
No,
it's difficult for those players, but also for female sport as a whole. You know, you want the product to be as good as it possibly can, and the best way to do that is to put on good matches, you know, but Hockeyans are the exact opposite of that.
Mm.
That is worrying from a small, or from the full picture scale.
Yep. It's going to be a big day in rugby in Croker next weekend, Anne-Marie.
Well, I don't know if there'll be a big crowd. Leinster head coach Leo Cullen insists they won't be lacking any motivation for next Saturday's United Rugby Championship final. Cullen's side advanced to the Croke Park decider with an 18-point victory over the holders Glasgow at the Aviva Stadium yesterday. So that saw them set up the chance to land a first piece of silverware in 4 years. It was a bit of a statement performance from Leo Cullen's side, who have come in for criticism since they were knocked out of the Investec Champions Cup last month. They were impressive yesterday. He was asked about this after the game.
I think there's just a desire to come out and perform for the people that support us over the course of a season. So, listen, so much work goes in. I think sometimes maybe people just assume we're going to naturally get through these games. Unfortunately, every team is working. Isn't a lot of work has gone in to get to this point. If you think the 18 regular season or regular games that happen in the season, so which start in September and work all the way to now in June. And there's a lot of players used, and there's a lot of, you know, effort that goes in to prepare week to week to ensure that you finish top of the pile. And there's a lot of players used, and listen, there's a lot, so much great work that goes in. So yeah, listen, when things don't pay off, you know, like which happened a few weeks ago in a different semi-final, yeah, like it hurts. Yeah, like it does hurt. We, as in, everyone should know that it hurts the team. And I think there's a desire just to get out there and play well. Like, as in, that's what we do. You got to dust yourselves off and show. That's what we talked about at that stage. Just show what you're made of. And it's just about getting through to the next round. And thankfully, we're in the final now.
So that's Leinster head coach Leo Cullen there. And they'll face the Bulls next week after they beat the Sharks by 12 points. Is anyone going to go to that? Like,
well,
I'm.
Because it's a final, you see, yesterday, what was it, 15,000 there yesterday? But the final aspect, there'll be a trophy at the end, there'll be celebrations. Some Leinster fans, not all of them, mind you, but some would potentially have been waiting for the final. When it comes to the URC, yesterday's semi-final could, you know, it would have been brilliant in the ODS.
Mm.
Obviously, they would have loved to have sold more tickets, but it just looked, you know, because the Republic of Ireland-Senegal game the other night, I know they said it was over 30,000, I think, in the official attendance, but even that looked bare. And of half of that in the Aviva yesterday, it's not great for a semi-final of a competition that's really important for teams to win. You saw Munster a couple of years ago, and I don't know. Croker is going to look very empty if there isn't a crowd there. And obviously, the South Africans will, some of them will travel over, but you'd imagine not a huge
amount,
number.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Last week was probably the most animated I've ever heard Leo Cullen. In his post-match interview. You know, calling upon supporters to come out and support the team, and they didn't yesterday.
You don't hear that too often from Leo Cullen.
No, yeah. Now, their performance yesterday was brilliant and there was an edge to it. You know, it was a bit of an angry performance, but the support, yeah, I don't know. Like, I know that obviously the URC is a massive step down from the Champions Cup, but you'd hope that more come out next week, particularly because it's going to be an 80,000-seater stadium.
Yeah.
If you've only got 20, 25,000 there, we all know what those early rounds of the Leinster Championship games can be like, where you can hear the seagulls. It's not great.
Yeah, was that
I hope
the league
it doesn't happen.
I went to the Division 2 and 4 doubleheader league final in Croke Park on a Saturday night there at the start of the year and or earlier in the year. And like, yeah, you can hear people talking rows and rows behind you. Look, it's a final. You'd imagine the Leinster fans will turn out, and they have that siege mentality a little bit. I was Joe McCarthy's comments after the match yesterday on television. He said, "We know everyone loves to hate Leinster. That definitely drives us on. We've a great fan base. We don't really care about the outside noise, what you guys in the media or other people say. We're going to rip into next week. It'll be a tough team we're playing, so there's no shortage of motivation." So they obviously don't really care what anyone says about attendances, about the Leinster team, about getting knocked out of the Champions Cup. There seems to be a bit of a siege mentality.
There are a few kind of talking points there as well, like a penny for Ross Byrne's thoughts, obviously heading off, and this could be his final game, and it'll be interesting to see, like, is he in contention now to start ahead of Prendergast, given the form there as of late?
Yeah, the tackling percentages wouldn't be hectic from Sam Prendergast's perspective. Interesting to hear what Leinster fans made of yesterday, made of the crowd. Are you going next week? 0879180180 is the WhatsApp, and 53106 at a cost of 30 cent for the text number as well. Some football, and well, Ange Postecoglou sacked a couple of days ago from Spurs, and one man is ruling himself out, could we say, Anne-Marie?
Maurizio Pochettino has dismissed speculation linking him with a return to Tottenham. He's called the idea not realistic. The Argentine coach signed a 2-year deal last September to take charge of the United States national team, and it's expected he will lead them into their home World Cup next year. Pochettino says he is focused on his current role and has reassured US fans that they should not be worried. Meanwhile, Spain will aim to win their third international competition in as many years tonight. The European champions look to retain their Nations League title when they take on their neighbours Portugal with the final in Munich. Stuttgart then plays host to this afternoon's third place playoff, that's between Germany and France, from 2 o'clock. And speaking of Portugal, Cristiano Ronaldo says he won't be playing at this month's Club World Cup. He's out of contract at Saudi Arabian club Al Nassr at the end of June, leading to suggestions he may sign for another club which is involved in the competition.
Yeah, we were speaking about the Spurs stuff on Football Saturday yesterday, and a lot of texts coming in and saying, you know, Thomas Frank will be mad to go to Spurs, that it's a basket case of a club. Look at Daniel Levy and, you know, his ability to sack managers despite a first trophy in 17 years. A lot of pieces in the Sunday paper review about the Ange Postecoglou stuff and the Spurs stuff, and how they're just, it just highlights the importance of a league position, you know, and no matter what trophies you win at top level football now, these owners really, really care about where you finish in the league. Now, you could say Manchester United finished, what, 15th and didn't win a trophy, but Amorim is earlier in his reign and probably is given the benefit of a transfer window or two, but yeah.
Frank would have to take it though if
he's odds on,
you know, but he'd have to take it if he is in line for it, because it's an opportunity to go manage at a so-called top six club. You know, he's had a great stint with Brentford, he's been there quite a while, got them promoted, kept them in the Premier League, but he's done everything he can there. Mm. And how often do these opportunities come about? And is it the worst time ever to manage Spurs? Like, the only way is up in the league. They can't finish worse than last season, and you've Champions League football.
Mm.
And it's an attractive club for players, you know, being in London, one of the best stadiums in the world. I don't know, perhaps last season, you know, finishing 17th was a little bit of a misrepresentation of where they actually are.
Because they kind of gave, well, not get, they gave up.
They did kind of throw the towel in, yeah, and they were ravaged with injuries. So I think they'd definitely be top table next season if Frank can come in and get a bit together.
If you were a Spurs fan, would you be upset with the sacking of Ange Postecoglou?
I don't know, it's a bit of a funny one. Like, he kind of comes right away from the whole situation as a bit of a
Oh, he's laughing.
Yeah.
All the way to the bank.
He's a win-win in this situation.
He's won a trophy, he's dropped the mic, and he is, well, I don't know what the payoff is for him, but...
But plus it's all sort of deflected then on the board and all the wider sort of management, and won a trophy first time in 17 years and then walk away.
Yeah.
Well, maybe be pushed more than walked, but at the same time, not a bad conclusion for him.
He'll pick up a good job in in a number of months, wherever he decides to go. By the way, Stoke City midfielder Beausan Loal has been added to the Republic of Ireland squad. That's been announced today as well, to play Luxembourg on Tuesday. So it's a 24-player group now. They're going to train this morning before heading to Luxembourg later on today. He's 22 years of age, just 7 appearances in the Championship last year, but former Bows and Celtic youngster, very highly rated. So looking forward to seeing him if he does come off the bench or plays at all against Luxembourg. Some golf as well to finish up, Anne-Marie.
Shane Lowry is 4 shots off the lead heading into the final day of the Canadian Open on the PGA Tour. He's 10 under par, but that's in a tie for 16th. A very, very crowded leaderboard there.
Anne-Marie Donlan, Lana Conan, thank you very much for the news round this afternoon. We'll keep you up to speed and everything else happening across the day here on Off the Ball Sunday on Newstalk. Just want to mention as well, for road trips, reruns, or doing absolutely nothing, there is an iced coffee for all your weekend plans. Cool off, kick back, or get going with our delicious range available at self-serve nations locations nationwide. Iced latte for trying out new hobbies. Iced oat latte for spontaneous plans. Iced white mocha for taking time for yourself. Iced mocha for new adventures. Whatever fills your cup this weekend, find it at Braeburn Coffee, exclusively in Applegreen. Loads to come between now and 7pm on the show. We will have the Sunday pay-per-view after 2 o'clock. Lisa Fallon and Paddy Christie going to join me in studio to come through the back pages and discuss the best sports writing and sports stories. We will have Tommy Welsh from Croke Park building up to Kilkenny versus Garbage with Tommy Rooney as well in situ there. Jonathan Higgins with updates from the Joe McDonagh Cup final between Laois and Kildare, which gets underway very shortly at 1:45. Football chat from 4 o'clock. David Snaid and Tim Clancy in studio with myself. We'll have that Barry McGuigan interview 40 years to the day after his world title fight in 1985, and loads of GAA reaction. Speaking of GAA reaction, up next we'll have all the reaction to the Munster hurling final between Cork and Limerick yesterday. Stay with us.